You are Locked On Cavaliers, your daily podcast on the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. As always, I'm Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com. Joining me today, he is one of the hosts of Locked On Blazers, and he also runs the site, The LeBron Wire. It's Eric Garcia Gunderson. Eric, what's going on, man?
Not much, man. It's Sunday, getting some errands done, grocery shopping, cleaning the bathroom, all the fun stuff that you love to do on a Sunday. So, and I'm talking to you now. So this is a step up from, you know, cleaning the bathroom, I gotta say.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm not as listeners of this podcast have heard me say to a couple different guests, abandoning football in my life on Sundays has made my Sundays much more productive. I just get more done. I have time to do a podcast about LeBron James being insane and just destroying people, and I don't have to think about the Browns, and it just makes my life a little bit easier to just ignore what's going on Sundays because I'm good. I don't need it.
I mean, today's sorry to interrupt, but today's kind of a little for the Browns at least. Today is like a little bit better than most Sundays though, because Josh Gordon's back, right?
Yeah, and like people, but it's like really interesting because people have been the team has been like hyping this up as this big thing. I'm just like, guys, you kind of wanted to cut him a couple months ago. You know, there's all these issues and you're an awful team. Like, mm-hmm. This isn't going to save your season, even if he scores like 5 touchdowns or something crazy. But connected to Josh Gordon in a weird way, because LeBron has been supportive of him and openly and helped him in all these different things. This podcast is going to be about LeBron James, how good he's been this year, why we think he's been good this year, and where he ends up falling in the MVP ladder. Before we get to that, though, Derrick Rose seems like he's coming back, and that's per Jason Lloyd of The Athletic. I was at the game yesterday, and they said there that they had been communicating with him, but there was no imminent timetable or return for him to come back to the team, and in what capacity and his health. There's not really hard details on where he's at right now. As far as I know, he left the team. He was still hurt when he left, so we don't know necessarily. And I'm not sure the Cavs can know without having looked at his ankle and looked at his, just kind of seeing where he's at, where he actually is when he does come back. But what was your reaction to hearing last night that Derrick Rose is going to be coming back to the team, it seems like?
Well, I think it's not that surprising because he is still, you know, in his late 20s, and there's no way he's actually going to retire given the numbers that have been thrown around about like the amount of money that he would lose, not just from his NBA contract, but from his Adidas deal if he were to retire. And I think it might have just been like he was just kind of depressed and frustrated with the injury and the rehab and all that stuff, and just needed to take some time away from the team where he's not, you know, seeing guys practice every day without pain. This is just how I'm imagining it. You know what I mean? Guys do what he can't do on a daily basis probably wasn't the best, you know, for his mental health more than anything. And that's probably why he stepped away. And then in the basketball sense, obviously they've played really well without him. So that is not, you know, you don't want him to come in and mess up what they've got going on. And so I think it's really interesting actually now, and I think we can talk about this with Tristan Thompson later too, how does Ty Lue approach this? Because he can't just like, I don't think he can just throw these guys back into the roles that they were in when they were healthy, because it seems like the Cavs have found something.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think with Rose, I don't think there's a basketball argument that he should just be inserted back into the rotation or the starting lineup. I don't think if you look at statistics, you look at what has made the Cavs successful, what has made Dwayne Wade so good over the past 11 games. I don't think there's a basketball argument for Derrick Rose to be back. Now, I think if he's going to come back, I do think Matt Moore tweeted this and kind of made it, and this is, I think, a fair point. I think you do have a situation where you don't want to have him be a locker room issue if he does come back and isn't playing. But there's two things about that I think kind of make me wonder if you just kind of have to deal with that. Number one, I think with how many guys the Cavs want to play, and where the where certain players are coming back, I don't know if you can really avoid cutting someone's minutes, right? And if you're going to have to cut someone's minutes, whether, you know, I'd rather play, just have Isaiah play more than play Rose. I would rather not have to cut into Jeff Green's minutes or Jay Crowder or J.R. Smith's minutes or Dwayne Wade's minutes and how good he's been to accommodate Derrick Rose. I don't think that makes sense. So I think I'd you might just have to deal with that. Number two, Isaiah's coming back at the same time, roughly. These guys theoretically could be coming back within a couple of days of each other. It'd be crazy if they came back on the same night, depending on how these things work. It's you kind of have to, I think, based on what we've seen from Rose and what you had from Isaiah last year and what you think how Isaiah fits, you kind of, I think, just got to put more eggs in your Isaiah basket. And that I just don't know what you do with Rose. And with Tristan, I think it's a slightly different conversation because I think you do need some of what he provides as a rebounder and a defender. The problem is Channing Frye's been so good and has provided so much floor spacing on those bench units that it is going to be an adjustment. And some of the mojo I think you see the Cavs that they have right now is probably going to go away when they have to incorporate all these guys back just because things are going to change and the flow they've developed is just going to get interrupted because they're adding back useful players that don't exactly play the same way.
Yeah, and the thing with Rose, I agree with you that since it sounds like Thomas is going to be back in like 2 weeks or less, you know,
at the game on Saturday night, watching him warm up looked like a guy whose hip feels very good.
Like
he's dribbling around, he's not just like shooting or doing less if he's, you know, shooting off the dribble. He's attacking off the dribble in warm-ups. He's had a long, at least 30-minute workout before the game. Like, this is a guy who's being put through the rigor in some way. They're not practicing on Sunday, and the Cavs have said they want him and they want Tristan to get some practice time in, so that maybe that delays some things there. But you're seeing a guy that is going through workouts that are not just he's shooting, he's taking layups, he's shooting free throws. This is a guy that's actually going through some workouts with assistant coaches that are asking him to be explosive and to move and to do some of the type of things you're going to see him do when he's actually playing. And it's not the same exact thing as going 5-on-5 in practice, but he just looks like a guy who's a lot healthier and who has a working hip.
Yeah, that's encouraging. And so you've got that you have to incorporate back into the lineup, and that is probably going to eat into maybe Wade's minutes a tiny bit. And they might have him on a restriction to start the season when he comes back. But I think with Rose, I think you just deal with it because, like, first of all, he's making the vet minimum. So it's not as if he is entitled to playing time with a salary like that. You know, a lot of times when you have a guy not playing and you look at, you know, his priorities, see how much he makes and stuff like that, then I think that can seep into someone's head. Like, they're paying me all this money to sit on the bench. I mean, they are paying him a lot of money for you and me, but relative to the rest of the Cavaliers, they're not. And I think they have to prioritize Isaiah. And I think that Rose can still serve a purpose some nights because as great as Wade has been in this role where he's playing 23, 24 minutes a night, I think we all know, though, that Wade is going to have to take some nights off, though. Like, he's going to have a night off here and there, and then you're going to need someone to play the role, someone to drive, someone to create on that second unit. And then I think that's where Rose can come in and maybe fill a role with that second unit if he can create some three-point shots for, you know, with Korver and Frye and those guys, if you need to give Wade a night off here and there, which I think they're going to have to eventually. I mean, it's been great, and but they've had a lot of injuries, and I think that as they want Wade to be as fresh as possible once the postseason gets here. So I think Rose can still have a role. It's just going to be a small one. And I think that even Calderon, the way he's played lately, the way he shot the three and is actually, as you know, you said the other day on Twitter, you know, he's actually trying now. Mm-hmm. I think there's a conversation there too about, you know, it seems like Calderon has kind of played his way into a little bit of a form, and I just think you deal with it because I don't think you can I don't think Ty Lue's thought process can be, what if I piss off Derrick Rose?
No, it like absolutely should not. I agree.
It cannot be his thought process. So I think they deal with it with Rose, and they'll figure it out. But I think Rose will have some moments where he plays. But now with Thomas back, I mean, this is kind of what – this is also kind of what he signed up for. And I think Rose, this is the whole thing with him that he's been saying the whole – season with the, you know, he's got a minutes restriction, he's trying to play into June and stuff like that. Well, you know, he's gonna have to play his role to get to June. So I think it's also a little bit of a, you know, put up or shut up time for D Rose as well, and I think he's gonna have to realize that sooner or later.
I agree, because I think if, let's say, you do put him into that, doing what some of Wade's doing, he'll have to do a couple things better than he's done. For one, he'll have to just be better on defense. He's been objectively just awful on that end. He mm-hmm. doesn't defend pick and rolls. He doesn't even have the, I mean, Wade has length that I think in kind of a veteran craftiness that Rose never has, doesn't, I mean, just physically doesn't have it, and has never shown that type of defensive craftiness. I think when you look at what he's done this year, he's averaging more turnovers per game than assists. He's not.
Yeah, that's bad.
It's yeah, like, it's bad. Like, box score numbers have their limitations and all these things, but like, that's just bad no matter how you spin it.
He's yeah, some, really, some, sometimes yeah. they're right, though. Sometimes
yeah.
they're right.
Yeah. And he struggled, I think, when he gets inside. He gets among the trees, among the taller guys, whether they're forward centers, whatever, and he just doesn't know what to do. I think that's a problem, and I think you could get to a situation where I think you could make the argument that when the Cavs are at their best, when they are running out their playoff rotation or what have you, they're better off playing Isaiah in that type of role. Like, maybe that's sliding Isaiah into that. Maybe at least when Wade hasn't enough, maybe you have to just give it to Wade in the playoffs because that's what's worked. I just think, like, you could do to a point where the return on Rose makes those lineups, which have been a big part of the reason why the Cavs won 11 straight. If Rose cannot fill that role and he makes those lineups bad, or less successful to a certain degree, that's ends up becoming a problem too, I think. And then I just wonder what you do. And I think you're right. If Derrick Rose is disgruntled, that cannot be something Ty Lue worries about. And I think, you know, that can be uncomfortable. The team has been supportive of him so far. They've been in communication with him. You've had LeBron and them say, we don't want to rush him. We'll see what his health's like when they do make this announcement, which they haven't done yet as we recorded this. I feel like we need the NPR politics thing where, like, someone's in the beginning says this podcast was recorded at, and then we say the time. It's 1:21 p.m. in the east as we record this, so we have not heard about Rose yet. But I think this is going to be it's far less important than what's going to happen with Tristan and Isaiah, but it's almost as fascinating because of who he is, where he is, and what he's already kind of publicly kind of gone through this year, and how away from the team he's been for a couple weeks now.
It's 1:22 right now, and you're listening to Locked On Cavaliers. that was my NPR voice.
I love the people that are they're at a middle of nowhere, and they're like, yeah, I'm at the Costco in the middle of Pennsylvania on this road trip, and I'm just like, what are you doing? Like, is this how you're entertaining yourself on your trip? I give you credit, but that was perfect. Like, that was absolutely perfect. The NPR. NPR.
I had to throw it in there. That was one of my, I've always joked that I needed to do a Locked On Blazers with just like the entire time with like some soft jazz in the background and all the NPR, you know, accoutrement that they have. But yeah, no, I think the Rose stuff is really interesting because of, like you said, who he is. I think it's always interesting when you have a player who is dealing with diminished skill, diminished health. You know, I always think that that's a really interesting kind of human story. How does he deal with that? I think it's really interesting. But the Tristan and Isaiah stuff, I think, is really interesting. And to me, I think Tristan is a lot more complicated than I imagined because of how good Fry has been for them and how well they have played, how well the foursome of Wade, Fry, Green, and Korver have played. I mean, I think that is going to be also really hard because I don't know how you change the starting lineup at this point, given how much success they've had, when that was something they were really searching for. And I mean, I don't think Tristan's expendable by any means. I think he has a use, but right now in the regular season, they're racking up wins with what they got going.
I agree. And we'll wrap it up on this. What would you do with Tristan? Would you start him or would you have him come off the bench?
Man, I guess I think I would. I think I'd have him come off the bench right now. I feel like they feel like I feel like the starting lineup, they kind of know what they're doing now defensively with the depending on who to blitz, who to pressure. I feel like Love has been more or less in the right place lately, and I think they have an understanding of what's going on out there. And I don't know. I know it's the regular season, and I know that's not the most important thing for the Cavaliers, but I don't know if you just go disrupt the flow if you don't have to. And now maybe Channing's finger injury, maybe he needs to take some time off or something, or needs to take a game off. You know, maybe that could help incorporate Tristan back into the fold because he's supposed to be back this week. But I really don't want to, you know, mess with what works right now. That's kind of how I feel. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And this is the problem, I think, inherently with the Cavaliers is and how many guys they signed this summer. It's like you signed 7 guys on a team that already had a rotation, already had a bunch of guys playing. You're going to run into this sooner or later. So I think right now they kind of have to ride the hot hand until it doesn't work anymore.
I agree. I think I'd have him come off the bench too. I think I would honestly just let's see what a Fry Thompson front court would look like. You know, I think that might be something you have to try. Tristan's probably going to also see minutes decrease because of this, right? Like I would imagine he's probably going to have to play a tad less because Fry's been good and he's fought on defense and he's rebounded and they're getting important things out of him. And because it's when you're playing Jeff Green as a 4 and you're playing Wade and you have, you know, depending on who else is out there, you don't quite have a ton of spacing. It could get a tad bit cramped. And if you put Thompson out there, that's kind of getting the same problem. That's adding to that, right? Like teams don't respect Jeff Green as a shooter. He's at his best when he's rolling to the rim, when he's cutting, when he's dunking. With Wade, it's when he's getting inside and he's creating and he's hit some threes. He's shooting like 50% from 3 during the win streak, and he's hit the heat until the Grizzlies game. He hit a 3 in 3 games in a row and whatnot, but he's not a good shooter, and he's never going to be a good shooter. That's not what he's going to be. So how does Tristan impact that even more, and does it get a little too snug on the court if he comes back without Fry? So maybe you have to figure that out. What does that mean for, I mean, Korver, I think, can't be squeezed out, and Wade certainly can't. Though, who does this impact, and what does it mean for guys like Green, for Crowder, for Fry? It's going to be really interesting to see. And I expect it to mess up the Cavs' flow. They have a really weak schedule coming up on paper, and this win streak could theoretically continue and keep going and going and going, but I almost think they might lose a game just because of the mojo and some of the things that are going to get disrupted when they're adding guys like Tristan, guys like Isaiah, guys like Derrick Rose back into the fold, then Lou has to refigure out what works and what doesn't.
Yeah, no, this is going to be really difficult, I think, for them. And I think you're right. It will disrupt the flow. There's no way that they can incorporate guys back into the lineup. And I think this is going to come at the cost of I think playing Tristan is going to come at the cost of floor spacing. And I think that is a big reason why that second unit for the Cavs with Fry and Korver has been so good. You know, Jeff Green fills the lane, runs in transition. You know, that's kind of his role on that unit. And Wade's kind of the conductor. And it feels like there's very defined roles on that group. And I would be very curious to see, you know, what happens when they throw Tristan out there. And I think it will hurt the spacing. I think it will, you know, sure, maybe it'll help on the offensive glass, but it's better if you're getting good shots and you have good shooters taking them with, like Fry and Korver. And I think it's going to be really difficult to find a way to incorporate Tristan. And as important as he's been to their success over the last few seasons, I think that's just where the Cavs are at right now. And I think just the fact that their bench has been so good makes it really hard for me to even kind of find a place to put him, given how good Fry has been. And now this is much more of a complicated issue in this respect than the Rose stuff because of the salary situation and how much Tristan makes and how much, you know, how big of a role he's played on all these past teams. He's, you know, an incumbent player. And I think this could be one that maybe creates a little bit more friction. You know, I don't know Tristan personally, but I would just imagine that being such a big part of the team, being the highly paid player that he is, and being kind of a fixture, I feel like that could maybe create a little bit more. And maybe if Tristan is cool about it and doesn't really care, yeah, that'd be great. But I'm curious to see how that works out the most, because Tristan has a lot more history with the Cavaliers.
I think with Isaiah too, that's a really interesting question, because I can't imagine Isaiah Thomas, who definitely plays with a chip on his shoulder, who's in a contract here, who has to prove that he's coming back from a hip injury. I think that's him to an even more so degree, that you have a guy who wants to prove that he is this good, that wants to prove that he's with LeBron, that has something to prove to the Celtics in the Eastern Conference. That's another guy. How do you ease him back in and make sure he's getting what he wants on a team with Wade? You know, like we know from Jason Lloyd this week that there were Cavs that weren't happy about Wade signing with the team, and you can venture to guess on who they were and their reasons why. But you know, how does Isaiah coming in, how does that affect J.R. Smith, who's been a bit inconsistent? You know, just does that eat into what Wade's done? Does that make him upset after he's seemingly found into a groove? You know, how does LeBron end up feeling about some of this? And you know, it ultimately may not matter, but incorporating Isaiah is going to be like just the biggest thing. Cause I think when you look at what he does and how much and he needs the ball, and even if he moves well off ball and whatnot, like that's going to be a judgment for itself, because Kevin Love, who we haven't even talked about, like in this whole thing, just kind of as fittingly forgotten about Kevin Love, Wade, LeBron, JR, who played really well against the Grizzlies. Those guys all need the ball and need shots. And then, you know, how does that impact Korver? How does that impact Green, Jay Crowder? I think I'll say this and I'll turn it to you, but the one guy that I think really might directly benefit from Isaiah is probably Jay Crowder. Because I wonder if you can get some chemistry with those two that can get Crowder going in a way we haven't seen yet. But I think everyone else is probably going to have an adjustment to Isaiah and is going to have some difference there. Even if Isaiah might be more malleable, like he's not Kyrie, and Kyrie has been really good this year, but what he was last year was not what Kyrie was with the Cavs last year. And I think that maybe will help it too, if they have him move around a little bit more and do things that are more dynamic and not just isolation attacks.
Yeah, no, Isaiah definitely has a lot more experience in, you know, throwing the ball, moving off ball, floating to the corner type of stuff that you see Curry do sometimes, where he moves off the ball and gets open looks. And so he definitely can do that a little bit more. I think the Crowder point is a good one, and I think they need that still. And Crowder still, I think, is still playing his way into shape. You know, I still don't think he's quite there yet, given everything that happened with him over the summer. But I think Thomas will be a really interesting thing. I think though, you know, as great as LeBron has been, and we'll get to that in a little bit, I guess, but I think he's going to want a little extra help. And I think Wade is also going to want a little extra help. You know, as great as these guys have been, and I think Wade and LeBron, Korver, you know, those guys closing out games has been really good for the Cavs, and I think is something that they'll probably end up sticking with. And I think that's going to be a really interesting thing, is who gets crunch time minutes once Isaiah gets back. But I do think that there is also going to be an adjustment period, just like there was with this entire Cavs team in those first 10 games when they didn't really know how to play with each other. And LeBron's talked about this, where, you know, they've started to figure out, you know, how to play with each other. You know, they're getting closer on these road trips, getting to know each other as people. And so that's helped the adjustment period. And Isaiah has been with them through all that time, but hasn't played. So there's obviously going to be at least a couple of games, I think, of adjustment to him and his style and what he can do. But I think ultimately, I think James and Wade will both really appreciate that Isaiah is there to do a little bit more of that heavy lifting on the perimeter, because they, as great as they've been, I don't think they should be doing it as much as they are.
I think you could argue too that the starting lineup does need more juice. Like, it hasn't, you know, quite been as dominant. I think the bench unit has been really good. I mean, just when LeBron sat against the Grizzlies. I have to double check my notes to make sure I'm right here, but they were down 2 when LeBron left. I think they were up 7 when LeBron came back. That would have never happened last year. And if the starting lineup can build leads for this bench unit that ends up coming in and then wreck shop, that puts the Cavs in a really strong position. And I was talking about this with Alex Hooper from 90.23 The Fan at the game last night. He posed me this question. The Cavs we saw in the finals last year cratered when LeBron sat, and those like 2 minutes that he sat, you know, they had a 10-point swing in the one game, right? I'm not saying this bench unit is like perfect against the Warriors, but if it can be like hold the line, how much better of a chance does that actually give the Cavs against a team like that? Like, is that something that even if it's not perfect, then it's going to have its issues and will have to certainly prove itself against a team like the Warriors? If it can work, that to me could be a huge benefit for the Cavs, even no matter what form it takes by then and whatnot. But I think that could be something that could work. But like, how much do you think that actually is an improvement? Like, how big of a deal is it that they have a bench unit that doesn't necessarily have to involve LeBron that actually works this year? How big of a deal is that?
I think it's a huge deal. I think it's major, because the point you just made is that, you know, it'd be like a 2 minute stretch that LeBron sat and Golden State would completely take over the game again. And they have Iguodala, they have Sean Livingston, and these guys have been able to go to work on the Cavs bench, you know, a lot of times. There have been a lot of games where in those finals where it's Leandro Barbosa goes off in the second unit and helps the Warriors steal a game. And I think this really matters. And I think Wade has been really good. And one of the things too with him is that, you know, Wade has a little bit of a post game. If they're playing him at point guard, you know, maybe he can go to work in the post and kind of create there. And they have a little bit more variety. There's a lot more things that you have to think about. And, you know, I do think it matters, because all those points matter. Those stretches, those minutes are important. And I think that the fact that Cleveland has established now that they don't just crumble when LeBron is off the court. I know that one of their best bench units has LeBron in it, but that Korver, Wade, Jeff Green, Fry foursome, even without him, I think one lineup they have him in with JR. And they're still one of the better net ratings on the team of their five-man lineup. So the fact that they've been able to outscore teams pretty comfortably, even without LeBron, is big. I think that's really big. And that's something that LeBron's needed. And I think that is, although they lost Kyrie, and Kyrie is amazing, I think this is one of the areas where it's about elevating LeBron. And I think if you can elevate LeBron and get him that type of help when he's not on the court, I think that could have some major benefits when they get to the finals, when they get to the conference finals, that they can kind of take care of business. And then you let LeBron's work really, you know, really put you over the edge if you can keep things close on the margins. And I think that is big. And that's something that I didn't really quite expect. But over this, you know, 11-game streak, that's kind of been the formula, has been how solid the bench is and how good they've been without LeBron.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how this holds up. As you're listening to this, at the beginning of the show, we talked about LeBron. Because we spent, I think rightfully so much time on this, that is going to be a separate pod. So I'm going to end recording here. You're going to check out Eric again on Wednesday. Because who wants to hear a Cavs-Kings preview? Part of the reason we're doing this now is because I was like, who wants to hear a Cavs-Bulls preview? So this will be your Monday show. And then Wednesday, come back for the second part of this, talking about LeBron's greatness and how good he's been. And know that we recorded it on a Sunday, but I think a lot of it will still hold because LeBron's very good. But for myself, for Eric Gunderson, this has been the Monday episode of Locked In Cavs. We'll talk to you again tomorrow after the Cavs play the Bulls.